Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is episode 223. My name is Rhea Windcaller. I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. In this week's episode, we're talking about a technique called maderization, which helps you fortify a product, such as Madeira. But in this case, it's going to be all about cider. So stay tuned for that. But first, coming up, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. In last week's episode, in the middle of producing that, there was a honk of a horn. I actually kept that in that episode, and that was my friend Jack, who was stopping by to drop off a bottle of his cider that he had keeved. And I did open it between then and now, and found that the cider was really lacking in any kind of body. It was kind of like just drinking sweetness with nothing much behind it. So it's just like a sweet, almost like apple juicy kind of flavor. And that always scares me to kind of drink too much of that one. It's not the way you want to consume your sweetness. So something went on with that keeving scene. And we already knew that instead of having a chapeau brun, a brown cap, the cap floated to the bottom. So I'm not sure really what went down there. But either way, you know, you got to try stuff. And, you know, the second time's a charm. And knowing Jack, he will be at it again. So I just wanted to follow up on that. And then there was an email that came in like a week or so ago, just catching up with some of these things here. And this came in from Marcel, who is our friend and cider maker in the Netherlands. And he wrote to me, "Hi Rhea, planted two Sorbus Domestica trees yesterday. Episode 219 and 220 made me very, very, very curious about this fruit." So he put a couple photos up here, and these are pretty sizable sorbs. They look like they are 1 meter or like 3 feet tall. Have a lot of leaves on the tree. So looking really healthy. And how exciting that you're doing that. Knowing Marcel, who also grows herbs on his farm in the Netherlands, he's in the process of building out a cidery there. So going full on commercial cider making, and then rolls in this stinking pandemic, and that kind of screws everybody up. Don't get me started. Okay, I've already started. That thing's driving me crazy. Anyways, he's pushing forward. And, you know, the Dutch are such amazing growers. So just looking at the photos, it's really cool. I'm going to post these once I kind of finish here today onto the Cider Chat Facebook page and tag Marcel, because it's really neat that you shared that. And you should put these up on Instagram and do hashtag Sorbus Domestica, because the French Pope of Sorbs, who is also known as Arnold, that's his real name, would love to see that. So put these up on Instagram, Marcel, if you can. I know you do have a feed, and the feed is, I think it's at Hoedener. I'm practicing my Dutch, getting a little bit of it. A G is pronounced as a H, so it's like Hoedener. I hope that's, I hope I'm doing, treating you right. All right, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Well, it is May when this here episode 223 is going live. And in terms of the apple blossoms in my spot of Ciderville, I'm still waiting. And that might sound a little unusual to you if you are in a warmer area of the universe. actually not the universe, but, you know, on Earth, and have already seen blossoms. Maybe you saw it like 2 months ago, but where I am, I'm still waiting, which is, you know, in some ways I feel like a little bit lucky about that, because it's the anticipation of the bloom that is just so, you know, thrilling. Like, is it yet? Is it yet? And then to actually see an apple tree blooming, there's just nothing better. So I hope you do get that opportunity to see that, if not this year, then next year. Because sometimes, to tell you the truth, I've been so busy working in past years that I didn't get to go to an orchard. And that's going to be probably limited for me this year, too. I'll just rely on my little pitiful apple trees that are just trying to survive. But I do have some good news to report in terms of exposing an apple tree that had been covered by a giant pine tree for quite a long time in my yard. I had this massive mother of all pine trees that was slowly starting to kind of break apart. I'd go out every winter and picking up all the branches, and it just was kind of getting away from itself. And I knew its days were numbered, and it was also towering over this apple tree that is probably pretty old, but because it's been covered, never had a chance to really bloom. So this past week, when I had to deal with a couple trees on the property and have a gentleman come over and take those down because the woodpeckers were telling me, these trees are a little diseased or ants are getting into it, all of a sudden, wow, the sunlight came in, and this apple tree is now free. I'm really excited because I actually have grafted a number of different varieties on this particular apple tree, and it's the oldest tree on my land. So, wow, I know that's probably not a big deal if you have like thousands of trees, but for me, one or two trees, it's huge. It's really huge, and I'm feeling happy about that. So that's the good news. More good news is that I am still believing in the world. I'm keeping my sanity despite the pandemics, despite quarantine, the weirdness of it all, just staying positive. As you well know, if you're a regular listener of Cider Chat, my pendulum always swings towards happiness. And as such, being the eternal optimist that I am keeping the England Cider Tour open. It'll be open up to July, where we see what's going on with the world. Maybe Mighty Mouse, the superhero, will arrive and save us all. That would be a beautiful thing. So keeping positive that way, if you want to find out more about the England Cider Tour scheduled for September 1st through the 6th, go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com and check it out. And if that is something that you're thinking, you know, dang, you know, it's looking good where I am, and I think I could go, please put me on the to-go list, Rhea. Keep me informed. Well, that's a good time to let me know now rather than coming up to July, so that we keep on inspiring each other. So again, the England Cider Tour, September 1st through the 6th. Check it out at ciderchat.com. Now, you would think that doing a cider podcast, the best part of it is drinking a lot of cider. And without a doubt, that is a big Benny. I get floored by the range of ciders that I get to taste from around the world, no doubt. But truthfully, the best part is you. Meeting people from around the world, having conversations, connecting, hearing what you're doing just thrills me to no end. And I don't feel alone. I mean, I'm in deep quarantine here, but it's so busy sometimes that I have a hard time getting back to emails because of Ciderville. So thank you. And one way that this podcast survives is via patrons of Cider Chat. That's via a website called Patreon, which helps content providers like me to continue producing our work. In this case, for me, it's Cider Chat. And most recently, there was a new patron of Cider Chat who came on board, and his name is Soon, and he's from Denmark. He wrote me a letter because I asked him a couple questions, and I just love kind of like going through a letter that is not in a person's native tongue. I mean, he's obviously speaking Danish because he's from Denmark, but he's so able to convey the message across in English. So bear with me as I go through this and share with you a bit about his experience in Denmark. He writes, "Thank you for so much great stuff and the extras. I'm mostly in it for the vinegar. The cider ferments are rare. Vinegar geeks are here more so in Denmark. I have joined a cider fermenting group to talk apples, and in that group was Nikki. He recommended you in the spring of 2019, and I have been waiting for Wednesdays ever since." And that's because on Wednesday is when I release a new episode. And I just love that. Happy Sunset Cider Club to you today, you and Nikki. Whoa, and everybody there in Denmark. Anyways, he goes on with, "About ciders and styles, I love the dry ones, but I am also, or used to be, a wine drinker, and I like ciders that go in that direction, sparkling or still. In the debate of what cider is good, it's good. Just fucking fermented juice. So, a wine guy. Some of the best ciders I have had were made by Torben from Copenhagen University. He made a champagne style with Bramley apples. It was Kyo concentrated, 12% alcohol by volume. It had an apple, floral, fruit, and freshly baked brioche. That sounds delicious. I've also had Cold Hand Winery's Rancho Malas Danica, an explosion of flavor, a sledgehammer of apple sweetness and orange peel." I love your qualifiers, a sledgehammer of apple sweetness and orange peel. Ba-boom. He goes, "As to my cider journey, I'm making balsamic apple vinegar for 11 years now. I was looking for people to share and talk with, so I found a cider gruppen, or a cider group in English. And it's called Rotting Apple Butts, which translates to roasting apples. It's an enthusiastic group of apple lovers in the city of Rotting. In the cider group, we try to make a lot. They make mostly dry ferments, and last year they made 400 gallons, all in 5-gallon fermenters. There were a lot of different results, some good, but all were learning. And we also have a barrel of vinegar in the attic, as he does get some leftovers from the cider guys. We are grafting and planting cider varieties of apples." So this sounds like a pretty, engaged group making 400 gallons. That's a lot of cider. I mean, are there like 20 people in it? Pretty cool. Anyways, really liked the extra with Ryan Monkman talking about yeast. Wow, that was so good. Torben talks about single-sorted ciders on a class I have attended. So perhaps it sounds like you'd like to hear a little bit more about single ciders. And Jens Skovbo of Cold Hand Winery is passionate about Kyre concentration. Your Tom Oliver episode was also fantastic. Thank you so much for your passion. Woo, thank you for taking the time to write and to fill us in on what's happening in Denmark. The only Danish producer I've had is Jeppe from Fejo Cidery, and his cider was incredible. But I haven't had any other Danish makers that I could think of offhand, and I might be missing somebody, so I'm sorry for that. But wow, I'm stoked to hear what's going on there, because I've heard it's been really an exciting scene for all of you. And wouldn't you know, part 3 this week is Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider in Ontario, Canada, answering a question that was actually sent in by Soon a couple weeks ago regarding matterization, that style that he was talking about there. And he actually talked about the cider from Cold Hand Winery, which was called Rancho Malas Danica. And I'm not familiar with that particular cider. So Ryan's going to delve into both of that. Soon, this is all about you this week. So thank you for becoming a patron, sending me so much info from your spot in Ciderville. And now let's all grab a glass, make sure it's full, and head to this chat. It's part 3 of the Quarantine Quad series with Ryan Monkman. Let's go on with this question from Soon, which is, have you ever made a maturation or rancho, am I saying that right, cider in barrels?
My background is in wine. Before I got into cider, I was a winemaker. And there's a type of wine called Madeira, which is a type of port, which I'm going to quickly go over the process just so if people listening don't know what Madeirization is. So this port is made on the island of Madeira, but it is, they take grapes and they basically ferment them halfway, and then they add brandy to it to fortify it. And they add enough brandy that the alcohol gets to about 20% and it stops the fermentation. So what you're left with is something that is boozy, around 20%, and still has sweetness left over because the fermentation didn't finish. And now that is generally how port is made. But in Madeira, they do another step, which is what we call Madeirization, which is they then put into barrel and they heat those barrels. They cook the fortified wine for sometimes years. And what happens when you cook that is you develop different kinds of flavors. So we use the term Madeirized to refer to this cooking process. If you've ever bought cider and left it in your car by accident in the summer, and then you take it inside a few days later and you open it and you think, oh, this tastes spoiled, or it tastes like stewed apple more than it should, it's likely because it got so hot in your car that it Madeirized it. Mm. So these cooked flavors, when not intended, we call them a fault. So if it wasn't intentional that it got cooked, that's a fault. But if done well, it can be incredibly delicious. There's a few things that can help with the process. So the question was, have I ever made a Madeirized cider? No, but we're planning one for this coming harvest, and we spent last harvest developing our plans so that we knew we would do it well. So we're going to be making one with Harvest 2020. The first thing is high alcohol helps. So if you get a high alcohol, and I go back to the fortifieds, because fortification is kind of the best way to get there, helps with this process, because the higher the alcohol, the slower you're going to get bacterial growth. And as you heat this barrel up, as you get it intentionally hot, you're going to encourage bacterial growth. Anything warm is going to have bacteria growing in it. Mm-hmm. So if you have high alcohol, it'll inhibit that a little bit. So our plan is to use a fortified cider. We're going to use Northern Spy. We're going to ferment it halfway, and then we're going to fortify it with apple brandy, and then we're going to age it in barrel in a hot place. So what we're going to get from that is the alcohol, which will protect against bacterial growth that we don't want. The other thing we get is sugar. So by fermenting, we pick our Northern Spies around, you know, if we're lucky, 17 brick, 16 to 17 brick, depending on the year. We let them hang pretty long, because our Northern Spy is around 9% alcohol. We're going to ferment that down about halfway, and then we'll fortify with alcohol, with the brandy. So we're going to be left with somewhere in the ballpark of 8% sugar. So it'll be quite sweet still. And that sugar helps with the Madeirization process in two ways. One, it creates the caramel flavor, which is really appealing. And two, it helps preserve an appearance of freshness when you've cooked out all your pretty aromatics. So any floral smells or ripe fruit smells, you're going to cook those off basically when you Madeirize something. So this is our approach that we're planning to do this harvest. And if anyone wants to shoot me an email and tell me that's a terrible idea and I should do this instead, then I'm all for it. We're going to take some really clean Northern Spy apples, ferment them partway through, about halfway through, and fortify with brandy. Then we're going to put it in a small barrel. We're going to put it through malolactic fermentation, because of the alcohol, and you don't want malolactic fermentation in the presence of sugar. So we're going to keep that barrel inside our cellar over the winter. And then as the temperature rises outside, we're going to put the barrel outside all summer. So it'll be about 30 degrees for 6 months. 30 Celsius, which is,
I'll get it here. 86 degrees.
Yeah.
86, yeah, Fahrenheit.
So that's kind of like our normal summer high temperatures. And we're going to matterize it like that. What we expect to come out of that is something similar to Madeira, but made with apples. And I think it's going to be quite pleasant. I'm really looking forward to it. The risk of matterization or cooking a barrel is if you have low alcohol, you're likely to get spoilage organism spike because they love warm temperatures. And if you don't have sugar, it's hard to keep a balanced flavor profile. So fortification is a great partner for matterization because it allows you to have high alcohol and maintain some sugar.
Yeah, and I imagine bottling something like that, would that go in that kind of like a long, tall dessert bottle? Is that how you would drink something like this, right? It's fortified. It's kind of like a pommeau or a ice cider.
Yeah. So you're bang on. The best way to think about it is a pommeau that's been intentionally heated. So similar packaging to that. Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to package it in yet. We'll find out. I don't really know. We choose bottles based on, we have a number of criteria for what bottles we use at Fieldbird. And all those criteria really, to be honest, quite limit us. So when it comes time to bottling, we'll see what is available that meets our criteria, and that's what we'll bottle it in.
Mm-hmm. And what is the final gravity that you're going to be looking at, or the alcohol by volume for that finished product?
Alcohol by volume will likely be about 17.5%, 18%. Mm-hmm. It'll depend on the acid and the tannin profile, because there's a distinct relationship called the suppleness index between tannin alcohol and acid. There we go. I don't know why my mind blanked there for a minute. there's something we call sweet spotting, but based on acid and tannin levels, and we can test for tannin, we can kind of get a feel for what our alcohol should be to get the perfect flavor profile. And when we're picking fruit and fermenting it, we don't have that necessarily as an option. But when we're fortifying, it's an option for us because we can fortify it anywhere from 17 to 23%. So we can basically geek out in the lab for a little bit and figure out what a good fortification level for it is.
And just for listeners, just if you're wondering what this word is, matterization, I'm going to spell it for you. It's MADERISATION. So there's no Z in there. Matterization. And the spelling came a little unclear through me, so I'm glad that we kind of cleared that up because I wasn't sure what I was looking for. The spelling check came in as matterization. I was like, what? Okay.
the best if someone's interested in what this flavor profile would be like, the best thing I can recommend is go to like a liquor store, or I guess right now order online. Mm-hmm. Order a bottle of Madeira, which is a type of port that's gone through this process. And the good ones are really, really good, and the bad ones are really, really bad. So it's fun. There's no mediocrity in the world of matterization. It's either like the most delicious thing you've ever had, or just completely garbage.
Well, let's go for the best. We'll try that. And I love that it gives another option to work with cider and really kind of stretch your skills. I'm going to kind of actually skip over Adrian's question for now, because I'd like to kind of finish up with that. And I'm going to go on to the couple of the questions that I had. First, starting with batonnage, which is like the stirring in of the lees. And this is something that, you know, you really brought me into, and I've practiced myself. And we had another cider maker on here from Art and Science, that's Stan Rinke, very, you know, great cider maker, winemaker too. And he was saying in an episode a couple back that unless you have a year with batonnage, it might not necessarily be worth it. And I was wondering, what is your opinion on the shortest amount of time to use batonnage as a technique? And are there any short-term benefits of doing batonnage if you're not going to keep it in your barrel for, or some people do it in stainless tube, as typically barrel, for a year or longer?
I think he and I are answering different, slightly different questions. So I don't want to speak for someone I don't know, or even someone I do know who isn't me. Mm-hmm. But there is truth in that the most prolific benefit of batonnage is extracting something called manna protein. So when yeast cells break down, one of the things that gets released from broken down yeast cells is a group of chemicals called manna proteins. And those manna proteins release into the cider and give a perception of sweetness. So it gives that thickness and that body that sugar would without the sugar. And it also does it in a much smoother way. So that's called manna protein. And the research shows that yeast don't really, they release a little bit, but it's not in standard temperatures at, you know, 65 degrees Fahrenheit. It's not really until about 9 months after fermentation is finished that they actually start to release these manna proteins in a substantial way. So if your goal is to get that creamy texture, I would agree with him that you need at least 9 months to a year of the batonnage to get that aspect of it. But I also say, and this is where I think we might be answering slightly different questions, is that there are significant short-term benefits. If you're not going to be aging for 9 months to a year or longer, there are still substantial short-term benefits. If you track your ferments, or you just kind of watch the little bubbler go, you'll notice that for the first few days, nothing happens. And then the speed starts to pick up and the speed peaks and it's going like crazy. And then it starts to slow down. And at a certain point, it just stops. Now, our goal is generally to have that stop when there's zero sugar left. However, what happens is in that slowing down process, the yeast, as they're slowing down, are producing less carbon dioxide, less bubbles. And if they're producing less bubbles, there's less agitation in the barrel or the tank or the carboy. So the yeast aren't floating around as much. So they start slowing down and sinking to the bottom, and they have a hard time finding the sugar. And what can happen is you might stop fermentation and still have a little bit of sugar left, because the yeast at that point have slowed down so much that they've sunk to the bottom of the vessel, and there's sugar up in the juice, kind of a little bit floating around, but the yeast are all at the bottom. They're not eating it anymore. So batonnage, even during fermentation, especially toward the end of fermentation, keeps the yeast in suspension and significantly increases your chances of doing a fully dry ferment. So using up all of the sugar that's possible to use up. So like that's the first short-term benefit. The second big short-term benefit is that lees themselves absorb a lot of the stuff that we try to manage. So if there are off aromas, lees can absorb them, which is true except for if you have like H2S, like rotting egg smells. Lees can sometimes make that worse, but generally lees can help pull in off aromas because the yeast absorb them. And then the third benefit in the short term is helping to maintain a reductive state. So just like oxygen isn't always bad, full reduction isn't always bad. So reduction is that rotting egg smell you sometimes get during fermentation. That's a type of reduction. That has gone too far. But if you back it off just a little bit, what ends up happening is you protect the cider from oxidation, and you can develop a group of flavor components that aren't accessible in a oxidized cider or in a less reduced cider. So a good example in the wine world of, I'm sorry, I always reference wine, but a good example in the wine world is like most Sauvignon Blanc, like I think Kim Crawford is like the one that's best known for this. Most Sauvignon Blanc has like all those rich tropical flavors. And those come from a somewhat reductive state. So not to the point where it's smelling like rotting eggs, but just a little bit before that. And as you mix the lees in, it helps maintain a reductive state. It helps keep things just on the edge there where those really pretty aromas can develop themselves. So I think there's certainly short-term benefits to batonnage. But he is right in saying that if you're looking for the manna protein extraction, if you're looking for like that fattiness, the perception of sweetness, you do need longer in barrel. You need 9 months at least. Is that non-committal enough?
No, that was fantastic. And I don't think it's about being non-committal. I think that when one maker makes a statement and I'm recording it, it could sometimes get misconstrued. So I'm glad to kind of clarify this a bit and have different approaches, because batonnage has really piqued people's interest since we first started talking about it on the podcast. And certainly I've been trying it and trying to understand it. And I think it's just something you got to keep on digging into to really fully appreciate all aspects of it. So I think that was well said.
My general response to it is it is almost always helpful. If you find that batonnage is making your cider smell worse, like smell more like rotting eggs, I would stop batonnage so it settles out, rack off the lees, add lees from another cider, and then keep doing batonnage is what I would do and is what we do at Fieldbird. We keep all the lees for as long as we can.
And you're keeping the lees in like a refrigerated setting, like in a sanitized jar, you put the lees in, or what do you mean by
that? Yeah, put them in buckets in the freezer. And there's a secondary benefit to that, which is actually when you freeze them, you it's called cracking. So when we rack a barrel and get it ready for bottling, if the lees are still clean and usable, we'll keep them and we'll freeze them for next harvest, because during harvest, lees can solve half the world's problems. And we freeze them. And that process helps break, it like splits the cells open. So rather than take 9 months to start releasing manna proteins, the stuff we freeze usually takes like 4 to 5 months.
Okay, wow.
But it speeds the process along a little bit.
That's neat, cracking. I like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
You crack lees by temperature manipulation.
Yeah.
So that's one way. That's the easiest way to do it. There is this massive machinery that a few, very, very few wineries have, and mostly in Italy. It's a system in southern France called flash detente, which is used for extracting more color from red grapes. But the same piece of equipment can be used to do this process with lees and extract flavor from it as well. But for us, freezing them in a bucket works pretty well.
You know, when you're topping off a barrel or you're going to freeze the lees, you got to be thinking ahead when you're even approaching a barrel to say, okay, I need to have enough cider from last year to be able to top off my barrel for this year. And mm-hmm. I think that's a very important, and that's also true in the glass carboy too, if you're going to be racking off the lees. But this is a bit of planning ahead for this coming cider season, is don't necessarily bottle all that cider. Save some if you're going to be working with a barrel coming up and you want to be topping it off.
Yeah, absolutely. And the smaller, like when you're doing it at home, it's a lot harder than when you're doing it in like a commercial setting. Because in a commercial setting, so we have, you know, 80 barrels right now. And if we run out of, so let's, I don't have my spreadsheet in front of me, but I think we have 14 Perry barrels right now. So if, like full of Perry.
Oh, that's music to my ears.
Oh, we, it's entirely your fault. we made more Perry this year than we did cider.
Oh my goodness. Wow, Ryan, that's
yeah, vintage 19 is at Fieldbird. Vintage 19 is about 55% Perry and 45% apple.
Wow.
And all of that is your fault. But a lot of our Perry we've bottle conditioned. So we bottled it recently, but we still have, I think, 14 barrels and a lot of that large format barrels, like big barrels. If we run out of top up for that, we'll what's called sacrifice a barrel. So we'll pick a barrel and empty it and use that to top the other ones. And that's always a fun game, because do you take the barrel you like the least and split it among everything, or do you take the one you like the most because you know it's going to make everything else a little bit better? So it's... Mm-hmm. Every time we have to sacrifice a barrel, we have this really like tough discussion of which barrel it's going to be.
Mm. Hey, what is your percentage of American barrels now?
We use American oak exclusively in the Perry program. We don't use it in the apple program. And we have six... We're about 8% American oak right now, wow. But it's all in the Perry program, and it's almost 50% of our Perry barrels right now.
Well, I think we'll hold that conversation for a future episode, talking more about the wood. I'd like to move on about the question about film yeast.
Sure.
Because this is a problem that I'm having in my barrel currently, and I haven't touched it, and I want to do something, and I've just been waiting to talk to you. You just got a little sneak peek on what we're going to be talking about next week, which is all about film yeast, what it is, and can you do anything about it when it shows up on your cider or wine? I found this really fascinating because, as you heard me saying, it's a problem that I have in my barrel. So we'll be getting to that next week on the final chapter for this Quarantine Quad series with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider, who always delivers. And if this has kicked up some questions for you, thinking, you know, I have this question, I wonder if Ryan would know anything about it, do send that my way and I'll pass it along to Ryan. And I'd love to do another Ask Ryan segment again. In the meanwhile, it is May. I'm going to go check some of my little palm trees out there. And, well, actually, I'm going to go look at the peach tree because sometimes that blooms a little bit earlier. And get out and just breathe it all in. And remember that all this pandemic, it's taking on the world. But we are so much bigger than all that. And nature shows us the glory of it all. This is Rhea Wincoller, saying a ciao for now, but I'm looking forward to seeing you, yes, you, out there in Ciderville.
We like cider, we like palms. Orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!